when we need to get our cars repaired, like anything else that needs to be repaired, you know, and that has kind of in that technical trade space, you know, because of the lack of people that are in this industry, you know, you've got a good portion of them that are nearing retirements, and it's going to have an impact on us, you know, when it comes to transportation. We've heard many instances where, you know, people that have to bring their cars in, they might not be getting their cars back for weeks and or months. If this issue is not addressed, that number and that time away from, you know, that vehicle that you need to get to your job to do anything that you might want to do is going to be severely impacted.
Any clue how important blue-collar workers are? If we didn't have awesome blue-collar workers, our lives would cease to exist. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. Debunking myths and shining a spotlight on the unsung heroes of our economy. We'll talk about everything from plumbing and electrical work to welding and beyond. Because let's face it, these are the backbone of our infrastructure. We'll talk about the skilled trades gap and uncover the countless benefits of pursuing a path in the trades. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. And now your host, a passionate advocate for the trades, this is Andrew Brown.
Brandon Eckenrode is the Managing Director of Collision Repair Education Foundation, an organization that has made a monumental impact in the skilled trades, particularly in the automotive collision repair industry. With a background that spans from earning a college degree in English and journalism to working in construction and eventually joining the collision industry, Brandon's journey is a testament to the diverse paths that lead to fulfilling careers in the trades. The Collision Repair Education Foundation has awarded $235,000 in scholarships and tool grants this year to 90 collision repair students across the country. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andrew. Happy to be here.
My wife recently was in a car accident. She's fine, but the car is not in good shape. It's one of those things like, oh my God, I got to get the car fixed. Luckily, everybody's okay. But we went down the path of trying to find an auto body shop that one was available, two, were the parts available, and can it be done for obviously the right amount of money? Obviously, you want a price shop. But first of all, the parts were back ordered. Second, a lot of the auto body shops I released around us didn't have time. So some of them were kind of way out there. And I got to speaking to some of the shop reps, because I like to always talk about the skilled trades and stuff like that. They said, yeah, we don't have enough people. And it got me thinking, well, it's not just the welding trade and it's not just the plumbing trade, but it's also auto collision. It's really causing delays for people to get their cars fixed. What are you seeing sort of out there in the industry? Are you seeing that too?
Absolutely. And this is, like you said, it's a nationwide issue. It's now, you know, impacting consumers, those that might get into an accident. Obviously, happy to hear that your wife is okay. But for when we need to get our cars repaired, like anything else that needs to be repaired, you know, and that has kind of in that technical trade space, you know, because of the lack of people that are in this industry, you know, you've got a good portion of them that are nearing retirements, and it's going to have an impact on us, you know, when it comes to transportation. We've heard many instances where, you know, people that have to bring their cars in, they might not be getting their cars back for weeks and or months. If this issue is not addressed, that number and that time away from, you know, that vehicle that you need to get to your job to do anything that you might want to do is going to be severely impacted. And that's just helps to reinforce the need that's out there. We saw coming out of the pandemic about, you know, there being a part shortage and things like that. And while there has been some increase or at least in, you know, improvements, it's still a significant issue that we need to address. But it's also, like you've talked about, you know, almost daily, that it's a viable career option that people should be considering. And those that are having an influence on young students when they're making those decisions should be made aware of what these career opportunities are, not just in our industry, but the technical trades as a whole.
Certain vehicles, and especially more modern vehicles versus older vehicles, require, if you're working on a Tesla versus working on a 1970, whatever it may be, it's very different. It's interesting enough, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, when I was in a technical school in New Jersey a handful of months ago, they were working on an old Jeep, and they must have ripped apart the Jeep, put the Jeep back together for years, and they don't have the budget to bring in a more updated car. You know, to work on a Tesla is extremely, extremely expensive. How do these kids get the right technical knowledge if the schools don't have the budget to bring in today's cars?
And that's, Andrew, where the Collision Repair Education Foundation, or CREF, is kind of the shorter acronym name that we kind of reference. But and through our industry partners that help support, you know, these high school and post-secondary collision school programs nationwide, the support that we get from the industry is crucial to ensure these technical school programs, whether it's the high school shop class or a community college or technical college, to ensure that they have the funding and or materials and equipment to make sure that they can, you know, properly teach current collision repair methods within these schools. And just like for last year, the foundation, through our industry partners, were able to get brand new vehicles donated, Audi and Volkswagen, to give credit where credit's due. They donated nearly 80 brand new vehicles that were slightly damaged in a shipment coming in overseas that they could not sell to the general public. But those ended up being great donations that we were able to distribute out to the schools so that they have current model vehicles to work on. And the kind of the when it comes to repairing technology today and, you know, current model vehicles, I always make the kind of reference that, you know, doctors have it easy. I'm a 1978 model human, and, you know, my insides haven't changed in terms of, you know, from back then, or people's, you know, how do you repair a human versus cars today? Like you said, you know, how you repair a vehicle that's several years old versus 20 years old has drastically changed because of materials, you know, electric, you know, hybrid. So in order for this industry and people to keep up with, you know, vehicle repair technology and those methods, you know, it's crucial that we instill that knowledge at that, you know, early education timeframe in someone's life so that when they come out of school and go to work in the industry, because that's obviously the end goal, they receive that best technical education possible. But without additional funding that CREF helps provide, you know, these schools would be in a pretty bad state, which some of them are. And that's what we're trying to help solve.
Because it would be great. And it's great that some of the big brand manufacturers have donated vehicles. I assume it's just a small subset of schools that have received those vehicles. But overall, I would perceive that a lot of schools are just working on older vehicles. And it's interesting, when I was walking through the shop as well, they were working on some of the staff as well. They were working on their cars. Someone had a ding of some sort and they were fixing the car, but it was good practice. And that was one of the only ways that they can get more of a modern car.
Just for some statistics, Andrew, just to kind of reinforce the need, you know, we hear instances where there are schools that have over 100 students and their total program budget is $3,000 or less. So the expectations on these schools are that they're graduating properly trained entry-level staff for the industry to employ. However, these instructors are doing the best they can with what resources and budgets that they have. But that's where CREF, again, with our industry partners since 2009, we've awarded over $200 million in support, which includes in-kind donations and monetary donations to help these instructors that are facing those types of budgets. And as a 501c3, it's always important to note that we return 90 cents of every dollar that's donated goes back to the schools. So we're lean and responsible in our operations. But it's crucial, and these instructors say without CREF support, which comes from our industry partners, you know, they wouldn't be able to teach proper collision repair education to these students. So it's obviously very appreciative to the support that we get, and we could not do it without them.
How do the teachers and the staff stay up and up on the latest technology? What are they doing?
So what we try to do working together with the industry is a lot of times companies that might provide, you know, training, whether it's maybe the paint companies or others, they will very graciously offer up, you know, if there's seats that they have available, if they're doing classes for the industry, if there's available seats, they will typically donate some of those training sessions for instructors to take. Just so it's kind of a train the trainer. We've facilitated industry guest speakers and others to help get these instructors aware of what's going on in the industry, because they might not always have that opportunity to know at the local level. But the industry is very gracious when providing that additional technical training for these instructors to make sure that they are passing that knowledge back down to their students to better prepare them.
So $235,000 in scholarships and tool grants this year alone, is that a record for your organization?
It is. And in addition to the student support that we provide, which is available in the spring semester, we also offer up support for the schools themselves. So they've got grant opportunities where the instructors can complete grant applications and kind of fill out and apply for what they specifically need. So if it's tools and equipment they need, they can apply for those opportunities. If they need additional help and resources to try to recruit students to the programs, they can apply for funding there. But yes, the students' scholarships and tool grants that we awarded this spring, great to see all the different award recipients that were, you know, that were made possible through our many different industry partners, and then also us collaborating with organizations like WIN, which is the Women's Industry Network. So we help them facilitate a scholarship that's available specifically for female collision students across the country as well. So it's obviously always great to help those that are applying and trying to seek that additional support that they need to continue their education.
How do kids get, if they're interested in collision repair, they like working on their cars. If you're coming up, you're in middle school, you're in high school, and you're not in a technical school, you're just in high school, what are a couple of good ways that someone can start to go down the career exploration of this side of the industry? What can they do?
Well, one thing would be if you go to our website, so collisionrepaireducationfoundation.org, we have a school locator, which helps people find local high school and post-secondary collision school programs. So we always encourage students, especially whether it's students and or maybe their parents or guardians, to go see and meet a local school program, to see and meet the instructor, to see what kind of program it is. Are they, you know, properly providing that proper training for their students there, and help interact with those students and instructors in the program to see if there is one? Because not all markets have a collision school program, as obviously with, you know, coming out of the pandemic and programs needing to look at their budgets and that being evaluated, you know, we're hearing instances where some programs are kind of being shuttered, which obviously we don't need. But we've also seen instances, and this is a great success, of some programs being reopened because their local administration market, they understand and realize that these are great career paths for the students, and they didn't have a local collision school program available to them. But then also go and meet the local industry if they can. We can help connect them with local industry members just to see what are the different career paths. Because so many in this industry, or I should say so many in the kind of general public, think of the industry and they might think it's either a body shop or an insurance company is the only two different career paths available to them, which are great career paths themselves. But there are a lot of different career paths, like my journey, where, you know, I've been in the industry all for almost 25 years, but you do not want me touching a vehicle because that's not my expertise. But there's a lot of different career paths available to them. And depending on the student, maybe what their interests are, there's a home that we could help find them within that industry. But that usually starts at that local schooling, technical education that they can receive.
How big is the trade itself? Do you have any kind of figures for how many people are sort of in the trade and what the shortage looks like?
The aftermarket industry as a whole is roughly, I want to say it's just under a $200 billion industry. So that's the aftermarket industry as a whole. So what we see is typically that this industry, I think the current numbers are about 30 to 40,000 additional new technicians coming into the industry every year is what we're looking for. So there's definitely a need. And that's just on the repair technician side. That's not to say other career paths that also are going to need people as well, as this industry, like other technical trades, you know, they're facing that aging workforce. So that's where CREF, in addition to trying to support these schools, you know, we've got efforts when it comes to trying to attract students to this industry with our work with the school counselors that I know that you're aware of. But then also our efforts, because we're so well connected with the schools and the industry, there's efforts that we do to help connect the employers and the students, whether it's at career fair events or encouraging the industry to go in and present to the schools so that the students get to meet and network and interact with those that are waiting for them. So it keeps them motivated to stay within that program and then obviously help make those connections so that when they are ready to graduate, they've already got that network of local industry members that they can start reaching out to, providing their resume to, and things like that. But it's going to take a group effort for us to obviously help address this.
Are there apprenticeship programs in the industry?
There are, and different companies have their own programs. You know, there's a program called Collision Engineering that has a model. It's modeled after what Rankin Technical College in St. Louis area initiated, but it's basically where the students are in the classroom for 8 weeks, and then they're in a shop for 8 weeks, learning hands-on skills with the industry, working together with that business. So there's different models that companies have, again, to help get those students kind of acclimated and kind of better prepared for live, you know, entry-level work whenever they do graduate.
A big pushback on a lot of kids today is that it comes to wages and it comes to, well, hands-on work, it's not going to yield that much money and I'd rather go a different direction. From a wage standpoint, also obviously depending on experience and location, is there a median salary or per hour rate that you're seeing kind of out there for the industry?
So it's a good question, Andrew. And it is something that, you know, this industry and some other technical trades that, you know, when they might come out of school and earning an entry level wage, it might be, depending on the business and things like that, it might be, you know, close to minimum wage or maybe, you know, between $15 to $20 per hour, depending on the location and things like that. So having the blunt conversation with students, you know, you may be able to make more if you go work at a XYZ, something outside this industry initially. However, the earning potential for these students that are willing to put in the work and effort, I'm based up in the Chicagoland area, and there's a dealership here where their 23-year-old staff member, who is a technician, didn't even go to a technical school college, but obviously learned working within the dealership. You know, that 23-year-old technician makes over $200,000 a year. Now, they had to put the time, energy, and effort to earn that. It's not just going to be given to the students, but you wouldn't find that same kind of opportunity working at, say, you know, a local maybe coffee shop or things like that within that short period of time. So the opportunity is there, but obviously that's where we try to also help make sure that when they're going through their technical education path and career, you know, we can kind of help with scholarships and the tool grants, like you mentioned before, just to kind of remove all those barriers that we can to make that decision and path into that industry as smooth as possible.
I've seen sort of different paths, and I have a friend who worked for BMW, went that path, and then he decided to open up his own shop. And that was the path that he wanted. And I guess there were some cons, I guess, for working that direction. And either hit a ceiling or he just couldn't move forward, and he decided he wanted to do his own thing and be more entrepreneurial. What are you seeing more kids gravitate towards? You know, are they working for Audi or BMW or Mercedes? Are they going that route? Or are some of them working for smaller shops and then eventually getting into the entrepreneurial route?
The vast majority, you always hear when we get to the chance to interact with these students, they always, you know, they have that entrepreneurial spirit where they say, I'm going to own my own shop. And a lot of them will start off, and that's where the biggest need is, whether it's working for maybe it's a smaller independent shop or a regional MSO, and then staying within that shop space to kind of like, you know, start off their career that way. And then once they get some experience and practice and kind of work within the industry, they're able to then start consider maybe doing their own kind of entrepreneurial type of path. But we also hear too is, you know, most students want to be a painter because they see people like, you know, say it's Chip Foose or Dave Kindig, you know, those car rebuild, you know, celebrities that have piqued their interest, which is great. A lot of them want to be painters. And we kind of try to help make sure that they understand all the different career paths, like I said, just for helping them explore what that is to help, you know, whenever they do enter into the industry.
You touched upon Chip Foose. Oh God, his work. He could just go from sketch. I mean, if people don't know Chip Foose, definitely check him out. I mean, he builds these unbelievable cars, but that's the excitement because kids can see that on TV and they can get, wow, one day maybe I can aspire to a Chip Foose or someone else in the industry. But it's great that Discovery Channel and other publications are sharing this. And I've had a couple of podcasts where we talked about different shows and different industries, but yeah, that's exciting. Like, for instance, what about like a SEMA show? Do you guys go to the SEMA show, which is obviously the aftermarket show? And it's Las Vegas, I believe, right?
Yes. So we're there to meet instructors and students that are in town, obviously the opportunity to network with them, but it's actually out at SEMA on Tuesday. It used to be Tuesday evening. Now it's Wednesday morning, where we announce the school grants that we award to the schools each year. So this past year out at SEMA on that Wednesday morning reception that we hold, we announced just under $700,000 in school grants that schools have from January to June to apply for. And again, they get to tailor that application to apply for what their specific needs are. We're there obviously to interact with our industry partners. There's obviously great networking opportunities for us to try to get additional businesses and companies and organizations involved with our efforts, but also just the students and the instructors that are out there, as that's obviously like a playground for anyone that likes anything car related. So it's a great week every year. And obviously looking forward to this year. Again, we'll be announcing our school grants out at the 2024 SEMA show as well.
I always like the aftermarket. I'm a big car enthusiast. Maybe you and I have chatted about this before, but I'm a huge enthusiast of cars and I love cars. And I've always gone to car shows with my dad, going to the Javits Center in New York City and seeing all the different cars. And he was into cars. And I've always just had this, I don't know, wow, look at that car, look at this car. I like to modify cars, all that type of stuff. I do feel tinkering with cars, that kids can tinker, right? Obviously under supervision and someone kind of showing them. How much of that have you seen where kids are getting interested at a young age because they're seeing your father work on their cars?
Absolutely. Whenever we hear stories, you know, from students, whether it's maybe a scholarship winner or something like that, you know, what initially piqued your interest about this industry? And there's always a family connection, whether it's maybe a guardian, a parent, maybe a relative that was in the industry and that's how they got, you know, initially interested. So that kind of early exposure and awareness to the industry is great. But you mentioned the car shows. What we have done in some markets, Andrew, is when we organize career fair events where we bring together hundreds, if not sometimes over 1,000 students to these events where these students get to network with employers, we've actually held some of these career fair events on auto show floors. So the purpose behind that, obviously, is not only just to get these students introduced to employers, but also when you are holding this type of event that can have anywhere from several hundred to close to 1,000 students, when the general public is there, when the mom, dad, and maybe their kids are bringing their students or their kids around, maybe similar to like what you said in terms of those early ages, people see our event, what's going on, and we typically provide the students with brand new Cintas shirts to wear to the event so they look professional whenever they're meeting with employers. So if you're at a car show and you see several hundred or up to 1,000 students all wearing the blue technician shirts, it stirs up conversation and interest where we've had parents, maybe even some younger kids come over and say, what's going on over here? And I said, well, you know, we're here to help connect these students with employers and here's what's going on in our industry. So while we want as much support that we're getting to go back to the schools, and we don't want to have this, you know, overinflated advertising budget where, you know, it's an opportunity to network with the general public and kind of talk about this industry with those students and kind of showcase these people are waiting for, you know, students to come up into this industry and there's a lot of different career paths and here's what their earning potential is. So it's a great way to connect with the general public too, to have that conversation with them at those events.
How much does mentorship fall into this? Working with somebody who's been in the industry for a while, because a lot of these individuals are obviously retiring. There's going to be a percentage that are retiring over the next sort of 5 or 10 years. And I feel like a lot of tricks of the trade, especially with the older vehicles, and I'm talking about collector cars, you know, the muscle cars, the older cars. I feel that portion is almost not dying, but it's slowly getting smaller and smaller. And I was having this conversation with an individual named Jeff Mason. He runs the Piston Foundation. I don't know if you know the Piston Foundation. And he was up in McPherson College. I guess that's one of the main colleges up there that does auto restoration. And it sounded like this just getting smaller and smaller. Not as many people are maybe buying those vehicles. On top of, there's no one to bring your classic muscle car to anymore. Are you seeing this on your end too? That, you know, it's starting to get smaller and smaller?
It is. And you can't, like you said, tinker with the newer cars maybe as easily as you could with the older cars. Because obviously when you get into electric vehicles, hybrid vehicles, there's a safety component that we want to make sure everyone's aware of. You know, the kind of work that you could do with those older, like you said, muscle cars was a lot, if you want to call it easier, you know, back in the day. But yeah, as more and more of these cars become more, you know, complex when it comes to technology and things like that, it's not the same as when you could back in the day where, you know, they got the car in the garage and things like that, working together with your dad, mom, whoever might be working on the car. But I think just trying to put a silver lining on the current situation is these cars now and the technology that's involved, I'm sure you'd understand, you know, we're basically driving computers on wheels. It's a unique opportunity for us to possibly look into trying to attract a new different segment of student where it's more the computer science or things like that, because of how you might diagnose and kind of work with a car. You can kind of maybe showcase that to a different demographic of student that you couldn't in the past because the cars weren't as automated and, you know, we didn't have hybrids and electric vehicles, you know, back in the day. So trying to put a positive spin on it, it's a new, unique way for us to hopefully then try to make this industry more aware to the students, but then also how we can attract them as well.
The cars have gotten so complex. Like, I'm good with navigating these different things, but my parents, oh God, you know, when they have to hook up things in the car, they have no idea. And I always joke around, like, you have to push a red button and that's going to save the world. And they don't, where's the red button? You know, like that type of thing. And they've gotten so complex, but it's what you said. Kids are interested in games. I'm thinking my kids, they're young and they're on the Xbox and they're on iPads and they're on Roblox and they're on Fortnite and all these different games that in different industries, especially this industry, the electronics, the technology behind this might open up a lot more doors. They would be interested in that side of it.
And as long as they're made aware of it. And that's some of our efforts in terms of trying to make the general public aware of what these opportunities are, whether it's students or those that are having an influence on their decisions. So the work that we do with the school counselors or trying to get out in front of the parents to kind of showcase this industry as an option, which they maybe not be aware of. They may be more familiar with maybe the mechanic side or auto service side of the industry, but not as much on the collision repair side. So, you know, working together with our partners and some of the efforts that we have, we're trying to help get in front of those students at an earlier age, because from what we're hearing, Andrew, in some cases, you know, some of these students are being told to pick their career path at like the junior high level, which is crazy to me, because what did you know at junior high level about what career path is? But if that is the reality, that is on us as an industry and the other technical trades as well to have some sort of presence and, you know, showcase what those different opportunities are. And maybe at the, you know, early, you know, student age, it's more games and things like that, that you can kind of showcase the industry. But knowing that these students might be told, you know, pick that career path, we need to be there to ready to present what those opportunities are. Otherwise, we're going to be losing those students to other maybe industries, which they might find career paths on as well. But it's important for us, obviously, especially if we want to be, you know, like you said at the onset about, you know, getting our cars back in a reasonable time after they're in an accident. This is a dire need where if we don't solve this now, you know, a bad situation is only going to go to be a worse situation. I'm the ever optimist in terms of, yes, we've got a, you know, big hill to overcome in terms of all these different things that what's happening, whether it's the technical education system or the public's perception of what this industry is. Now more than ever is the time, because I'm sure you've seen there is a national dialogue around, is college the best route for everybody? So we need to take advantage of that conversation and dialogue and showcase all the different technical trades. We're obviously focused on the collision repair side, but there's other organizations that are doing similar work that need to showcase that as well for their trades and different industries.
Are you finding some pushback from parents where, you know, their kid is interested in the trade, but parents are like, no, I think you should go to college? Are you having those sort of conversations with parents and having to sit down and say, hey, like, this is the ladder of success if you do this, this, and this? Are you seeing that on your end?
Yes. And when we get the chance to have that conversation, and it's not just the parents, to be honest, Andrew, it's also sometimes the school administration who they might have a program or considering a program. And if they don't have any kind of technical trade industry background, they'll lean away from those programs, possibly for multiple reasons, whether it's the cost to bring, you know, one of those programs to life in terms of the tools, the equipment, and things like that, or just maybe the perception. Again, there might be a local high school or post-secondary collision repair school program that could use some help in terms of making it look like a current model or a current technical training facility. So it feeds into the perception, but that's where us working together with our industry partners and getting the industry engaged and invested in their local schools is key. The phrase has been used many times over where this is a national problem with a local solution. And that local solution, you know, volunteering on advisory boards, getting in front of the students and the instructor, getting in front of the administration so that those administrators see these large rooms of employers saying, you know, your school could be graduating 10 times the amount of students, and it's still not going to fulfill the need in this local market. So making sure you speak their language when it comes to this is about careers and jobs for these students. And without that work and engagement, we're not going to see the success that we need in terms of attracting students into these programs and the industry, and then obviously getting them connected with those industry employers once they do graduate.
Shop class was mostly removed out of high school. Are there still a good amount of shop classes when it comes to vehicles? Are you still seeing that out there? Because some of them are taking it out because of budget standpoint, some of it insurance reasons. And just, it's just, they don't want people to go into the industry more so and to go into college. But are you seeing percentage-wise that still there or not as much?
The foundation works if you're, it's a high school program or a post-secondary collision repair or auto body repair. Sometimes they call it different things. If they've got a program that's at the high school, post-secondary level, they're kind of under our umbrella of we want to work and support with them. And according to our database, which we try to keep current every single year, there's roughly about 950 programs left. That includes both high school and post-secondary. Now, that number has come down over the past couple of years. You know, it used to be maybe like 12 to 1300. There are some programs that if they might be closing, that's not necessarily a bad thing because it might be more of a hobby shop kind of class where they're not really teaching the proper, you know, technical training that they could. There are programs that are closing or kind of being looked at for possible closure. However, we've also had some recent success where we were able to get once shuttered collision school programs reopened. And the reason they were reopened was kind of like what I just said before, is the administration said, you know, we'll consider bringing this program back, but we want to see that industry that's going to be there to support the program. So that's where CREF, in addition to other industry partners that we have, kind of rally the local industry to bring them into these meetings with the school administration to say, we're here to help support this program. We want to see it be successful. We've been able to get some of those programs reopened. And there's actually one just up the street in Rockford, Illinois, that just reopened in this past year, and their first graduating collision class is happening this Friday. So I'm looking forward to go seeing the students, congratulate them, tell them that there's an industry waiting for them whenever they're ready, just to reinforce they made the right decision and choosing that as a career option.
That's wonderful to hear. I'm sure that's not always the case, in a sense that I'm sure there's a lot of discussion back and forth with the board or the administration. Some of them are probably for it, some of them are not, but I'm sure the process does take a while.
It does, as you can imagine, working on state and the local level and the district level, all the red tape you have to get through. but the conversation needs to start at some point. And we're working with other schools, whether they are expanding their current program. We've had some schools, there's one up in Northwest Wisconsin, Chippewa Valley Technical College, where they invested over $60 million in a brand new transportation center. We're working together with Augusta Tech, where they did not have a collision program. I was just there last month, where they're planning to open up their brand new program at the end of next year. So to your point about it, it does take some time because of the investment needed in tools, equipment, supplies, and things like that. But thankfully, a lot of administrators are understanding that this is a need. And with like Augusta Tech, there is not a collision school program within several hours of where that new program will be. So it becomes almost like a beacon of light and hope for the students to get a career path, because the employers are going to be, you know, working together with that school to be on the advisory board to get these students connected with, you know, career opportunities that they have. So we are seeing progress. Sometimes it does take, it's slower than sometimes you like, but again, obviously for the betterment of the students and giving them that viable option, as opposed to being burdened with that mountain of student debt they might have and not as many job prospects depending on the path they go. So it's what I've enjoyed the most, honestly, out of the past 20 or so years with working within the industry.
Do you see guidance counselors having that conversation with kids about working with their hands, and especially trying to say, hey, I know that you work on cars. Have you thought about this path sort of in the trades? Are you seeing that as well, that there's more conversation sort of happening?
There is. And the work that we're doing in that space is hearing, obviously, that the school counselors, they're kind of the gatekeepers. You know, when you're talking with students, you know, I'm going to send the student this kind of path, or I'm going to send them this path. And there's always been that perception of the, you know, you're a bad kid, you know, just go down to shop class and get out of my hair until you graduate. And then I don't have to deal with you anymore. So as opposed to just complaining about the school counselors, in my view, and what the organization has done is try to make them allies of ours when it comes to sharing that information. You know, let the students decide, but at least, you know, provide the correct and up-to-date information about this industry and all the different opportunities. So for the past several years, there is a national body for the school counselors called the American School Counselor Association. They hold an annual conference every summer. This year, it's going to be in Kansas City. That conference gathers anywhere between 4,000 to 6,000 kindergarten through high school counselors from around the country. CREF is there, in addition to other industry members, to help provide that, you know, that information about the industry. And to be honest, Andrew, I went into that conference getting ready for there to be a lot more pushback in terms of, you know, you're not the four-year college route. They don't want to engage with you. But I was actually encouraged about the number of school counselors that came up to us. And they said, we know and understand that we need to embrace the technical trades more. What we're looking for is, where do I send the student, or what material do you have for me to have that conversation with them? So don't expect me, the counselor, to remember everything about your industry, because I've got 20 other industries that are doing the same. So providing them the resources so that they can accurately provide, you know, what are the different career paths and earning potential and things like that. So whether it's even elementary school, junior high, or high school, I think there's opportunities there. And I think our collaboration and work with the school counselors should and will only grow, just to make sure that that group has current and up-to-date information about what this industry offers.
What does the information sort of look like? And I'm just thinking about this because I have someone on our STAC Foundation, Skilled Trades Advisory Council, called Explore the Trades, and Kate Cimeno. She works for Explore the Trades, and they send out these posters to all the schools around the country, a plumber's path, a welder's path, all different paths. So career counselors can have this literally hanging up in their room. What do you have material-wise to give over to guidance counselors?
Great that you connected with Kate. Know Kate well. And actually, I met her initially, I think it was at the American School Counselor Conference, or it might have been the Skills USA National Conference, but love the work that she and that organization are doing in that space with those trades. But similar to kind of what you mentioned, what Kate has created, you know, career path banners that show the different paths within our industry. But then also ICARV, which is a nonprofit training organization within the industry, they just created, for the betterment of the industry, what's called collisioncareers.com. So it is the tool that the public should be able to utilize to find more information about this industry. How do I find a school near me? It's meant to be that public-facing resource for people, the general public, to learn more about the industry. So we work very closely with ICAR. They're one of our largest industry supporters. But, you know, they'll be at the American School Counselor Conference as well, in addition to events like Skills USA and their national competition that's taking place down in Atlanta in a couple of weeks. We'll be there to help support the estimating, refinishing, and collision repair students, being that encouragement to them to say, you know, you picked a great field, and help make them, you know, feel welcomed and kind of embraced, that we can help find them, you know, careers and homes within this industry once they do graduate.
You talked about Skills USA. I will be there as well. in the next couple of weeks. This is my first time. I was going to go last year, but I unfortunately couldn't make it. But I'm super excited to see all the competitions. I'm sure you've been there before. What's the competition on the auto side?
And I just got goosebumps, Andrew, in terms of when you talk about skills, and I'm so glad, obviously it'll be great to see you in person down there. It's considered the technical trade Olympics. I mean, I think you have over 100 different technical trades, and it's the best of the best around the country that earn the right to go down to Atlanta to compete. So in our specific industry, there is a collision repair competition for both high school and post-secondary. There is a refinishing competition, and then also an estimating. And what was great to see last year, Andrew, at the refinishing high school level, first, second, and third, best of the best in the country, were all female students. And I can't stress enough the amount of instructors that have told us that I wish, you know, my female students are the most, you know, attention to detail, the work ethic. So it's been great to see more females kind of exploring this trade and especially competing at that national level. And World Skills, which is actually happening this September in France, we being the US, we're sending a female refinishing student to go compete against the best and the best in the world out at World Skills in France later on this year. So I'm anxiously looking forward to seeing your, you know, experience out of skills, because next to t-shirt printing, next to cosmetology, next to airplane engine maintenance, I mean, you have 100 different technical trades that are happening. And it's an incredible event to see these students who have earned their right to be there. We're there to support them and obviously congratulate the instructors, because it's also a testament that the fact that they're there is that they've obviously have a good quality collision program. So we're typically there. I'll be down there volunteering to help with setup and things like that. But it's a great event. Obviously, looking forward to seeing you there too.
Yeah, likewise. And I'm super excited to just see all the different competitions going on. And you have all these people who are advocates for the trades under one roof. And it's super excited to go down there and super excited to meet you and other people down there making such a huge difference in the trades. You touched upon women in the trade. Percentage-wise, are you starting to see that uptick? You'd mentioned a little bit that there's more women coming to trades. Is there a percentage out there that you could share?
It is growing. I don't have the percentage offhand, and I can definitely share some data and things like that that we have that kind of helps describe kind of what that is, but it's definitely on an uptick. And then also, we, as I mentioned before in the conversation, you know, we collaborate with organizations like WIN, the Women's Industry Network, which is basically within the collision industry, made up of female industry members. They have an annual conference. They have a scholarship that we help facilitate for them that's for female students, you know, studying this field. So we plan to only, you know, grow that collaboration so that we can help remove any financial barriers, tool barriers that female students, and then obviously with other work that we do for any students that are learning this trade, that it just makes it a kind of a no-brainer in terms of student debt, got that taken care of if you're applying for the scholarships. And there's many different scholarship opportunities available out there as long as the students take advantage of them. The entry-level tool sets, you know, if we go to work for a, you know, a white-collar job, you know, we're provided a laptop and things like that. You know, some students, they don't have that entry-level tool set that they need to go to start work, and they have to actually buy that set and kind of grow that set as they progress in their career. Cref's role in helping to make sure that they can graduate and have that set to start off their career. Every little thing like that can help make these students transition from the school to the industry careers, obviously, is impactful.
That's great to hear that there's more women that are getting more involved. I've seen this across all trades, that percentage it's still low, but it's getting better and better. I think through social media, and I think you have some of these influencers out there, women are showing exactly what they're doing in different trades, that women are more confident and comfortable to be like, yeah, if they can do it, I can do it.
And the instructors, like I said, they rave about their female students in terms of their attitude, their work ethic, and kind of it's them showing up the boys in the classroom, which is, it's great to hear. And especially at last year's skills to see on the refinishing side, first, second, and third. And I'm pretty sure it was the high school competition that it was all female students. So happy to introduce you to some of the students that they were once students, but they're now in the industry and they're volunteering at skills and things like that. So they'll be down in Atlanta as well. So happy to make those introductions, Andrew.
And I appreciate that. And I love highlighting success stories of people that have gone through trade school and are doing well sort of in the industry. So I always like meeting people who have been there and done that and are really doing well sort of in their craft. So that's great to see. We connected originally through the 69 Camaro that you're doing fundraising for. Tell us a little bit about it. How far along is that project?
Sure. 2 years ago with Cref KTL Restorations, which is a car rebuild, like a Chip Foose, you know, they're out in Danville, Virginia, and then BASF, the paint company, we announced a program initiative called Operative Talent. So the idea behind this industry needs talent like other industry trades. So the initiative is KTL Restorations, in addition to, I think now over 50 build partners, are helping to rebuild a 69 Camaro that will be raffled off later this fall. And companies or individuals have an opportunity to support this either by buying raffle tickets for the vehicle, or if they want to make a contribution to the fund and the fundraiser initiative itself. But the funds raised from this raffle will specifically fund a public outreach, kind of a call it a PSA campaign, to showcase and highlight this industry. So if you remember that Got Milk campaign of old, the idea is, you know, we talked like we were talking here about the general public, those that might not be aware of this industry, but need to be made aware of it. The funding from that fundraiser will help fund that kind of public outreach to talk about the industry, showcase the different career paths, the earning potential and things like that. So we'll be kind of, as this is the kind of the last year, similar to kind of what you said in the beginning, Andrew, in terms of the part shortage, there was a little bit of slight delay in the vehicle being rebuilt just because of some of the shortages like that. But any individual or business can help contribute to this, whether they're trying to buy raffle tickets to actually win the car, or if they're a business that understands and believes that this industry needs to be promoted to the general public. The funds that are raised will determine kind of the broader scale of what this PSA campaign can do. So happy to have them reach out to me for more information, or they can go to operativetalent.com to see information about the build. They can purchase raffle tickets. We're looking forward to making that a successful fundraiser just so we can help promote this industry to the general public.
Yeah, I'd like to see who wins at the end. Where is it in its build out?
The car should be on display out at SEMA. I should think within the next month or two, the car should be kind of wrapping up in terms of the build. We'll make sure there's, you know, up to date, kind of seeing the vehicle being built, but then also working up towards the raffle being announced here within the next 2 months.
Good luck with that program. I was super excited to hear about that. And that's just a great way to get also people sort of interested in the collision repair trade. And it's a great fundraiser for your organization. What else is next sort of down the road for you and your organization that's coming up in the pipeline?
So as we've kind of entered into the summer break, a lot of schools are off for the break. However, there's kind of no downtime for us in terms of the industry. We'll have a national meetings out in Denver in July. So we have our annual golf fundraiser that takes place during those meetings, which raises a little over $100,000 usually each year, co-hosted by PPG, Automotive Refinish, in addition to other industry partners and sponsors of the event. But we'll be preparing for the upcoming school year. So we're having great conversations with companies that are looking to donate, whether it's monetarily to help provide student scholarships and school grants, or in-kind donations, which the in-kind donations, which makes up the vast majority of that 200 plus million that we've awarded. So just think of the consumables, the tools, the equipment, the vehicles, the parts that these programs need. So we're working now to get a lot of our industry partners ready for the upcoming school year, because going back to like what I said, Andrew, you know, these instructors, they need and want to see that industry engagement. One of their biggest pet peeves is, don't come into my program during the end of the spring semester and ask for my best students when I could have hopefully been working with you all throughout the year. So with volunteering on the advisory board and things like that. So a lot of our efforts are around trying to help connect these businesses with what schools are in their local markets and making sure that their staff are actively engaged with them. So a lot of it is preparation for the upcoming school year. And then obviously with events like SEMA and others happening around the country, being there to help showcase, whether it's, you know, thanking our industry partners or talking with the students in their classrooms around the country about our career fairs or other events that we're kind of engaging with.
And what's the best way to stay connected with you on social media? What's the best way to reach out to you directly if they want any more information?
I highly encourage, to your point, follow CREF, Collision Repair Education Foundation, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, to kind of hear what the latest and greatest is going on with our different initiatives. And then also connect with us, and happy to reach out, whether it's through our website to get our contact information, or maybe that's something that you can help share, Andrew, is, you know, if you want to get engaged and you're just not aware of what those opportunities are, what schools are in your local markets, we're happy to help make those introductions. And then obviously help facilitate those support conversations around how we can help get them involved and ensuring that their local school programs are successful and, you know, thriving with a steady pool and stream of students, you know, being interested in the industry. And then also, once they do graduate, getting them into the industry for employment opportunities.
Well, Brandon, it's been excellent having you on the show today. If you're interested in collision repair, reach out to Brandon. His foundation is doing wonderful things, as you heard in this podcast. Brandon, thank you so much for being on the show today.
I appreciate being on here, Andrew, and thank you for the support and just helping to spread the word about the work that we're doing and trying to get more people involved to help support the students.
Thank you to our listeners, where our mission is to flip the script on the blue-collar skilled trades and make them cool. Once again, we'll see you on the next episode.
You've been listening to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast. Sure, nothing wrong with going to college, but there's just as much honor and need for people to be blue-collar workers that are the very backbone of our infrastructure. Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit the website at www.andrewbrowntrades.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.